for war, never back down, give me some more. We came for the title, killing the game.
Welcome into another episode of Patrick Jones Baseball. On this week's episode, we have Micah Franklin. So Micah has been in professional baseball for over 30 years. He's done everything. He's coached, he's played, he's scouted. He's got a ton of knowledge and wisdom, and has worked with some of the best players in the world. And so in this episode, he talks about his own background, and then we also dive pretty deep because on top of all the things that you know he's done over his career, and he still works with a lot of players privately in the off season. And so one of the players he's been working with the last couple of years has been Cody Bellinger. And so they started working together after Cody had that really bad year with the Dodgers before he went over to the Cubs. And so they worked together and obviously played big dividends as he had a really good bounce back season with the Cubs and now just recently re-signed with them too. So Micah talks a lot about, you know, what the changes they made, how they went about their work, what's it typically like on a day-to-day basis. So he gives some really good insight that I think is extremely valuable just because it's always good to know what some of the best players and hitters are doing and working on. And it's also good to know, I think, too, that, you know, hey, a lot of these guys are humans and they doubt themselves. They have fear, too. And so I think that it makes them more even more relatable. So I think it's going to be something that you'll enjoy listening to. March is here, and so that means that my in-season mental game training program has been rolling and going very well so far. So if you're someone who is interested in getting better at the mental game, whether it be approach, confidence, routines, habits, anything, send me an email, jonesbaseballtraining@gmail.com. I've had a ton of fun working with the players that I've worked with so far. And so this is for high school, college, or professional players. And so maybe you've started out the season on a good note and you want to become even better. Or maybe you're someone who didn't start out the way you would have liked to. Some doubt starting to creep in and you don't have the tools necessary to be able to get yourself back over the hump. So if you want to improve your mental game, send me an email, jonesbaseballtraining@gmail.com. And we'll see if we're a good fit to work together. All right, here we go with Micah Franklin.
This is the future. This is my time. I grind and shine. I put in the work and push the line. I'm holding my crown. I never back down.
All right, we now welcome onto the podcast Micah Franklin. Micah, thanks for coming on the show today.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me.
So it's been a minute since, you know, we've seen each other, but you know, it's been a few years. I know, you know, you've been in professional baseball for, you know, a very, very long time, ton of experience as a player and as a coach. And now you're going to be the manager of the Oakland Ballers in the Pioneer League, which is really exciting. Why? Just out of curiosity, I played independent baseball for a couple of years. I liked it because it's about winning and it's not, you know, there's less politics involved. We can just say that. But why did you decide to take on this journey, this route, this new challenge of being a manager in independent baseball?
Yeah, a couple of reasons. You kind of nailed it right there. It's about winning. Man, winning is amazing. I think a lot of people forgot about winning. The game of baseball right now, it's almost like sometimes you wonder, do the front office, are they happier if their algorithm comes out right in that game or the actual final score came out right? You know, sometimes I'm not sure if they're happy if we won the game and their algorithm didn't come out right. It's crazy. So, but I'm from San Francisco. So for the Bay Area, and for me, it's my 31st year in professional baseball. And I think it's time to come and give back. And now that the draft has abandoned rounds 21 to 50, there's a lot of players throughout the history of this game who have made it to the major leagues and made a difference on teams in those rounds. And I think our league, especially with the Pioneer League and our owners, Paul Freeman, Brian Carmel, they're unbelievable what they're going to bring to the Oakland community. And that is a place that really needs the Oakland Ballers, and the Oakland Ballers need them. So it's a perfect match.
Where are you guys going to play in Oakland?
Ernie Raimondi Park. It's in West Oakland. Ernie Raimondi was actually a baseball player. Unfortunately, he passed away in World War II. So there's a lot of history. You had Vada Pinson, you had Frank Robinson, Joe Moore. You had so many players through the history that actually first started playing at that ballpark. So it's kind of cool that they're going to rebuild that whole area up nicely.
And then how do you go about getting the players on your roster? Like how do you go about signing players? I know it's, you're more so responsible for that versus an affiliate. They kind of give you the players where they draft or sign or whatnot, but you have a lot of that power in independent baseball. So what's been your way of doing that so far?
Well, that's a great question right there. So we're doing independent ball a little differently. We got Don Wakamatsu, who is our senior VP of baseball. So they're running it like it's a major league team versus just a regular indie team where it's a manager and maybe one other guy and the coach or hitting coach and trying to find players. So it's kind of a great experience working with Walk. We got Tyler Peterson, assistant to him. And we're going out there. It was a lot easier getting position players than it is pitchers. Pitchers are in facilities and they all still think they're going to get an organizational job. So we have to wait for that. But position players were a little different. We call them up and we start talking to them about baseball. And, obviously right away they're upset they didn't get drafted. Obviously, who wouldn't be? And then we started talking about, hitting. Everyone likes hitting, right? So you talk about hitting, and bam, it's like, hey, hit my Instagram, hit me up, take out some of the stuff that we do that we can provide. And, our coaching staff's Aaron Miles is going to be defensive coordinator, third base coach. JT Snow is going to be first base coach, bench coach, Zen Master. Ray King is going to be the pitching coach. So, not to mention all the other people in the Oakland community who want to be part of this, who are former big leaguers who say they're going to come in and help out.
I like that. When does spring training start for you guys?
Ooh, it's going to be a fast spring training. Come in ready to go. May 12th in the first game, I guess May 12th is reported. So May 13th, first game is the 21st. So
Wow.
you ain't coming in not ready. You coming in
Right.
ready.
How many games is the regular season?
Was it 96
Dang, that's no
game schedule?
joke. That's no
So it's gonna be a
joke.
lot of fun, a lot of fun.
How'd you sign up that all-star staff? I mean, that's an incredible staff you guys have.
It was a lot easier than we thought at first. I came on board. Ray King was on already on board. Don Wakamatsu came on board. Then Walk signed me up, and then after our release, JT Snow and Aaron Miles reached out to us because that was our issue with the startup, to get guys, and we wanted guys from the Bay Area. So that was big. And my God, they reached out to us and it was like, heck yeah, are you kidding me? We want you. Yeah, so it was awesome.
That's good stuff. So I know you spent a lot of time, you having been a player yourself, and maybe let's just start there. Like, I'm curious to hear your approach to hitting back when you were a player. Like, can you walk us through how you thought about hitting, your routine, your mindset, all of that?
So that is the question. That's awesome. Because when we first signed, and you have to be careful because you're like, oh, back in our day, well, we walked 10 miles to school. You know what I mean? It's different today than then, and it is, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with being different, but there's still things that are the same, we didn't have batting cages at our facility. I didn't have a batting cage in my second year in AAA. I didn't have a hitting coach until my first year in AAA. We had a little net and a screen on the side of the field, that you would hit it on a tee or you would guy would throw a side toss to you or whatever. You had 3 rounds of BP where you had two coaches who can barely get the ball up there anymore. Because so we actually learned just to hit, and I think there's something to be said for that, learning how to hit different. From pitches and still being able to hit line drives all over the park in BP. But as I grew, I would say after my first few years, I really started understanding and letting the ball travel as a switch hitter. So it was easier for me instead of gearing up. I used to always hear the word, be ready for the fastball, be ready for the fastball. Well, the only problem with that is I was too early all the time, and I'm rolling over, I'm jumping at the ball, and I realized, hey, I had to be ready for his fastest pitch. Let me throw 92, 93. Just be ready for that. But I looked changeup. So it allowed me to slow down. And that's when I started using a 34 and a half, 34 ounce bat or 34 and a half, 33 ounce bat. It allowed me to not roll my wrist earlier. So now we understand the difference between that and guys who roll a wrist. You can stay palm up and you can stay through the ball. So the things we know now, we get to it faster, which is nice. It's still the same philosophy, but we get to it faster. So those little things really allowed me to be able to stay through balls, drive balls the other way. And I realized that was my strength. Not just turning on fastballs. That wasn't really good for me. I would top spin. I would, try to destroy a ball instead of just hit through a ball and let the ball go out of the ballpark on its own that way.
I think you had told me at one point that a lot of the your at bats, you went up there trying to hit a home run opposite field. Was that true?
I pretty much tried to hit a home run opposite field pretty much every pitch.
Really?
That's exactly what I tried to do. My man Jake Alou's calling me. Let me turn him off real quick.
Oh,
It's a
you're
day of the
good.
game today.
Do you recommend that same approach to a lot of the guys you work with now?
No. So it all depends on what kind of hitter that is. But we do have a lot of rounds with backside, trying to hit backside home runs, or I call it maybe all soft toss. And we'll say backside, the ball needs to land on the warning track. Backside. Anybody can pull the ball, and pulling the ball really leads to really a lot of bad habits until a player really understands himself. And there's some people that should pull the ball only, but for the most part, learning how to hit and staying through balls, you hit it the other way and you drive it the other way. Leads to a lot of good things. Not for everybody, not at all for everybody, but that is a really good way of hitting, of learning how to hit.
What would you say? I mean, generically speaking, a percentage of major league hitters who think hit the ball the other way versus pull it?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So a bunch of the ones I work with and a bunch of ones they talk to and hear the stories that we're hearing now, more and more are going back to that. They got on and they got with, hit the ball in the air on the pull side. And you know what? They lost their swing. It's amazing how many lost their swing. And now they're getting back to their swing again, and they're hitting balls, driving it the other way, not being so concerned about pulling the ball because they can pull correctly. And they're having a lot more success right now, those ones who are going back to that.
I know you've done a lot of work with a lot of players, in the off season. It seems like every time, I mean, I'm texting you, it's like 6 a.m. there, you're already up and rolling, like you're ready to work with guys all day long. What's a regular day like for you in the off season?
When the off season, like you just said, we're at the cages early, but we're done early. So if we're not later in the off season, we'll go to the field a few times a week. So we'll hit in the cage and then go to the field. But we try to get out of there by one. So if we have group come in, and like you said, 7:30, they're in. Then we'll have another group come in, and then by they're out of there early. My guys, they got kids, they got families. They're not trying to sit there at 3, 4 in the afternoon and hit. So it's not that bad. I like we get up early and we're out of the cage. By 1 o'clock we're back home.
What are some of the stuff, like, what's some of the stuff that you're working on with those guys?
Every single one of them. The thing we use right now, whether you're a home run hitter, line drive hitter, or slap hitter, it doesn't matter. We use the word 7-22. Get off your 7-22 directional bat path, which means the batting average last year in the major leagues and pretty much every year, you can go qualified hitters, you can go down if you wanted to add people that didn't qualify. Qualified hitters was 677 with a 1600 plus OPS, right? Then when you hit the ball less than 88, it went all the way up to 731, So it lets you know all that is a number. We used to say just hit a line drive through the middle. Well, it really is the same thing, but it's not. You're not going to be able to get off just an A swing. That's ridiculous. We used to say that all the time. Sit back, drive your A swing. Well, that's great and everything, but you're going to be off. You're going to be a little early. You're going to be a little late. But do you have your directional 7-22 swing path, which means you have a swing path that you can handle balls and hit them and line drives, stay through the ball, stay inside the ball. And hopefully by doing that, guys who can drive balls and hit home runs will hit more home runs. They might go in the first row versus the scoreboard, but they'll give themselves more chances to actually for the ball to go out of the ballpark.
How did you come up with the 7-22?
I changed terminology. That's it. We hit a line drive swing. I got caught up into the same thing with pull. Let's get the ball up in the air, don't hit on the ground and this and that. And learning, the more I've learned about how the body moves, the more I learned about 4D, 3D, K vest and all that, blast and everything, the more we've all come back to hit a line drive, stay through the zone as long as you can, have adjustability, don't get to your strongest position, get to your most efficient, strongest position, and hit the ball.
So you were for a while, you went to the opposite, the deep end, right?
And I went to the dark side. Yeah.
The dark side.
No doubt. No
what
doubt.
What made you, what was the turning point? Was there a turning point where you're like, I don't know. I don't actually think this is, this works.
Yeah. There's no doubt. So when I was scouting and, the amount of analytical stuff we do on the scouting side and numbers, there's no question when you put it into a big pot, okay? There's no question if you can pull the ball in the air and, yeah, that's great. You're going to have better numbers. So when you come into pro ball, as I started coaching, I'm like, yeah, let's just do this. Let's put screens right in front and hit the ball in the air. And, well, it doesn't mean that you practice that way. There's better ways to practice to get that result. So it doesn't mean I don't like pulled balls in the air. It just means there's a better way to practice it so we can still do all the other things correctly. And when we need to pull in the air, we'll just do that. It'll come in an autonomous stage and it just happens naturally, organically.
How long did you scout for?
10 years?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
What was that like? I haven't been able to talk to too many scouts.
Scouting was awesome. I love scouting. Scouting changed just like development, player development. Maybe it's good, maybe it's bad. I think we missed a lot of really athletic players and we went for more players with less athleticism and can match their algorithm. And those guys may have already been maxed out of what they can do because the college has helped them. They do a great job in colleges developing, but then that's it. They're done. Where a younger, more athletic guy still has time to continue to grow and get better and better and better. And we're missing that right now.
Where were you scouting at?
So I did the amateur for the first few years of the D-backs. Then I went over to the pro side. I was a major league scout, and then I did some advanced with Seattle.
Which one do you like better, amateur or pro?
I like the pro. Much
really?
Better. I did it. Yeah, because I would go all the way to A ball, all the way to the major leagues with the organization. So you followed that player, whether it was Arenado, Matt Chapman, Posey, you saw the growth and you start understanding and seeing why players continue to get better and other players didn't, which is really cool versus just a player came in there and you see him for a series and you don't see him again. It was kind of nice to grow with that player. Amateur was awesome. I love the huge big showcases and all those national showcases. You saw all the guys in high school come in. But at the end of the day, and you're throwing your – what you think about them, and there's other 30 other people that's doing the same thing in that room, and someone makes a decision and takes them.
You mentioned that it was – you could see why certain guys got better and other guys didn't when you were scouting on the pro side. What was it? Why were some guys getting better?
So there's different scenarios. Arenado was a – great example. I remember seeing he was playing in Asheville. And when you look, he just slowed the game down. And I gave him, I probably was light. I think I gave him 60 power for a season, not raw power. Obviously, I had raw power, but it would hit, 25, 30 home runs, whatever. And I remember getting called into that office. How is he going to hit those, home runs? He's only got two in the Asheville in July, And I'm like, look, the way he calms his at-bats. He's able to, at such an 18, 19 years, he's able to really stay calm. And you don't see that from other players. You knew defensively he had to get better. He had dug feet, wasn't a good defender, believe it or not. And he did. He got better. Within the next few years, he got better and better. But you saw the ability to stay calm during at bats, especially runners in scoring. I mean, they were unbelievable numbers. And you could see that, you know.
Yeah, that's okay. So that was gonna be my next question. Like, how do you see that? Is just body language, like breathing? Like, how do you actually go about
You
seeing that?
just named it. You named it. Is breathing. You see the takes, how calm it is. And that's why scouting with the eyes is still so important, you know, because you can go into his body, into his at bat, and just see the way he takes a ball with the man on third, less than two infield in, where other kids in A ball are freaking out. They could be 2, 3, 4 years older than him, and he's just nope, no problem. They just crush a ball in the right center gap, you know, and take a slider. I mean, Mike Trout was the same thing. Couldn't pull the ball to save his life, right? But all he did was kill that right center gap, and it's a triple. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Who's the best player you ever scouted?
They're different ways. Different ways. You go to Major League and see it's too easy, because then you go and you know you throw out a Major League or Mike Trout or whatever, and Arenado's, you know, but when you see them when they were younger, I think Trout, Arenado, you got to see him. I got to see Posey, all these great players. I mean, Yelich in high school. I mean, you name them, we saw them. So it's Harper. I mean, it was unbelievable. Are you kidding me? At 16, he's playing in junior college, and he's catching one game in the doubleheader. Then he's playing center and pitching and hitting bombs left and right. It was a joke. You know what I mean? It was unbelievable. So those are slam dunks. If you miss those, you're done. You know, you just got no chance. You know, that's easy. It's the other guy that has some flaws that you got to see. You don't know which way they're going to go. You can put down on paper, these guys say, hey, these are his pluses, these are his weaknesses. And, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes you flip a coin. When someone goes, oh, I knew. Come on, man. You didn't know it. It just happened. But people always say, oh, yeah, I got him. I got him. Save it. That's why they put him in the sixth, seventh, 10th round. Yeah, you got him. All right. You know? But yeah, no doubt. I mean, Cody Bellinger was another one. I mean, hell, I had him middle of the order guy at 17 years old. They were yelling at, but it's just you saw it in him. You saw that ability to just, you know, he can run, he can hit. His bat path was unbelievable there. His line drives, left center gap, center field. He wasn't really a pool guy at all. And I mean, it was like, whoa, this is nice, you know. And you see him at 17, 18, then you see him in the big leagues, and then all of a sudden, oh, what happened? And then he's back.
So yeah, let's speaking of him, I know you've
Yeah.
done a ton of work with him over the last couple of years, and you were really instrumental in his massive turnaround, which I don't know if I've ever seen a turnaround quite like that, because he really dropped off like crazy. Take me through like what exactly happened, how you guys ended up collaborating and working together, and I mean, because it's been amazing to watch.
Yeah, no, Cody. I've known Cody since he was younger. So when I was a scout with the D-backs, they started a program. Me and Mike Fetters ran his program. It was called D-back Elite Scout Team. And I mean, he played on it. Cole Tucker, big leaguer. Patrick Murphy, big leaguer. Ryan Castellani, he was on it, big leaguer. There's 22 guys that played professional ball in that. Jamie Westbrook in AAA now with those guys. And you name it. We ran it like it was a professional team. We played every single day. The D-backs gave us field two. And for 2 months, that's what we did. So we got to see Cody at that age. And Cody at that age was a little skinny kid who could absolutely fly, threw 95 off the bump, unbelievable gold glove at first, played center, and hit balls, line drives, rockets to left center field. And he came up that way in the minor league. So we would hit in the offseason a few times. Then he had the MVP year, and then he stayed in California for a lot. And he did some other stuff with out there and came back. So we didn't really hit. He would come into town or whatever. We'd hit a few times, but not much. And then a couple of years after that, right before the MVP, we hit a little bit more that year. And then again, we didn't hit much. COVID, other things happened. He's hitting other places. So after that year, that really bad year, by the end of the year, we were talking a lot more. And then he reached out and said, Micah, let's get busy. So last offseason, I mean, it was early. We were in that cage, like you said, 7 in the morning. We'd go in there, just me and him, and we'd go. And he didn't like it at first. He goes, "Man, I don't feel right." I said, "I know. We're redoing the foundation. The foundation got lost. You know, he lost. He absolutely lost his swing." And that's kind of what happens when you're trying to hit balls on the scoreboard. You know, you lose. And he's not a guy that can do that. He's really not. I know 19, the balls were a little juiced more. He's more of a guy that's going to hit a lot of balls in the first row and hit doubles and triples and things like that. So we had a good long talk about that. Let's get your foundation back, and let's get a swing path that plays for your skill. You know, I mean, maybe when he's older and can't run like he can, well, then we can go back to trying to hit balls off the scoreboard. But that's not working. So we got back and we were in that cage, and man, he did it. He did was all him. You know, all we did is do drills that everyone knows how to do, but he was ready to do it.
So his approach or went from trying to pull balls essentially to going back to, as you call it, the 7-22. So when he was having his bad few years, it was because he was trying to pull everything in the air.
Well, I mean, I don't want to say he was trying to pull everything to me. I think he was going to try to hit home runs. But his direction was horrible. I mean, he'd be like at the first base coach sometimes. You know, I'm like, how the hell do you even keep a ball fair when you hit it good? I would be afraid to be the first base coach, right? So we worked that direction, you know, and with the direction and the swing path, and then we didn't worry about getting in the back hip at all. Don't worry about getting into that. I got to get in my hip. Nope, it's your front side. If your front side's down in time, Cody's the latest starter in baseball. Well, it's ridiculous how late he starts. And, you know, that was something that is who he is. You can't tell him we'll start earlier. It's not going to happen. You know, so, well, how did he get? You got to get him more efficient then. He can't keep that swing and start that leg at his age and with his injury that he had. It's not going to happen. So he had to get a more efficient swing and not get so into that back hip. That's going to happen organically as he has a better forward move. And we worked the forward move, we worked the front side. And from that, it just started, you know, working. The swing started feeling better for him. It started getting more comfortable and had a great year last year.
Was he trying to get into his back hip before?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Everyone in baseball said, "Get in your back hip. Get that coil. Come on." And it wasn't working for him. When he came at it, that bat dragged. And I mean, he couldn't even barely hit a ball built up, right? I mean, it was tough for him. So, you know, that wasn't who Cody is. But when you lose who you are, it's as a swing, it's hard to get it back. So he put hard work in and got it back.
Yeah, what about the mentality? Obviously, I know that, like anybody else, these guys are human beings and, they're failing a lot. I'm sure there's times he doubted himself that he lost it, right? And he couldn't get it back. But what would be like if you're a high school kid listening to this, like what would be something that they could take away learning from him being at the top of the mountain and then going all the way back down and then now going back up to the top again? Like, was he someone who was like really started to doubt himself and, had to be like brought back up again? Like, take me through his mentality a little bit.
Yeah, I think what people don't know is major league hitters are fragile, extremely fragile, just as fragile as a 12-year-old kid out there. And the 13, you know, it's no different. It's life. Just because they hit the ball more and better doesn't mean they're not insecure and fragile about it, because an out is an out. You get out a lot in baseball and you start questioning, you know. And when you're getting out and you're missing balls that you used to hit, you really start questioning, like, what the hell's going on, you know? So there's no question. That plays a part in any hitter, not just Cody, but any hitter. I mean, you go from MVP to being having the one of the worst swings in the game. That's tough, you know, to swallow. But he swallowed that and said, I can't have this. I gotta have a better swing." Now he's like 98th percentile swing percentage, and you know what I mean? And that's to him. That's saying, okay, I have to give up something to get something. And he gave up trying to just launch balls off scoreboards, and he went to, "Hey, I don't care. Let that guy try to spoil. I'll spoil his pitch." And that's really helped him in two strikes last year and other times where it's, no, they laugh when we're out there doing dirty 30 and going nasty with it. Man, they've hit some ball off me and they bloop it in there like that. They love it. Or they go backside hit on two strikes on a slider down and away or cutter. Dude, they're all over me. Yeah, they hit a home run, they could care less. Of course they're gonna do that, but yeah, it's kind of cool to watch.
Yeah, that is awesome. What are some of the other things that you guys did? Like, is there certain, and I love how you mentioned, it's like you guys did like a lot of the same drills that you see all over the place, but it sounds like the intent was maybe a little bit different. Like, why do you think that with your guys that you named and were working with, like they've been having success, and maybe other people who are doing the exact same drills are not seeing the results?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of reasons with that. And so for one is when I flip a ball, I don't flip it down the middle. I'm gonna flip it in, I'm gonna flip it away, I'm gonna flip it up, and they don't know when I'm gonna flip it. So first of all, I have to keep them honest that way. So they stay honest. They don't know where it's gonna go, but they still have to hit it 7 to 22. So they can't just sit there and pick a location and tee off on it. So that's number one. So that's huge. And I'll throw balls in those flips. So they never know what they're going to get. I may take off a hair, I may put on a hair. That's huge. I also very rarely even record the side view because it's fool's gold. It's people who don't know hitting want to do that. Now you have to do it on certain things to get a checkpoint. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I'll watch people, they'll send me video. That's all they're sending me. That tells me nothing. I set up behind the hitter. That tells me everything. I can go inside that hitter's head as we're talking through it and see and feel how he's feeling. And that allows us to get to that next level in that drill. Hey, what if we did this or this? A side view doesn't see the ball. It tells me nothing, absolutely nothing. So I think that's the difference. Like you said, everyone does the same drill. It's when you do it, how you do it, listen to your hitter. What are they saying versus how you want them to hit? How are they telling you how they're hitting?
What advice would you have for younger guys? Younger guys, maybe this is going to be the advice you give your guys this year. For the Oakland Ballers from a hitting standpoint, take us through like what do you? I know everyone's going to be a little bit different, but like approach wise, maybe even like going into like game planning that type of a thing. Like, what's going to be your philosophy based upon what you've seen when working with the best hitters in the world?
Yeah, I mean it's great because we talk about who you are and what are you. So let's first of all tell me what you think you are as a hitter. And if they're way off, I can put out numbers and say, oh, if that's where you want to get to, there's some things you're missing here. Or they have a great understanding of who they are. And then I'm saying, well, why did you take a 3-1 monster hack then? If you're a gap-to-gap guy, line drive guy, why wouldn't you take the most easiest pitch to do, a 3-1 fastball, and try to just hit it right back through the middle? Why would you all of a sudden you change? Now you're 3-2 and chase a slider. I mean, that's the simple part of really coaching and talking to your hitters and let them know that the more you take the correct swing, the more chances you'll actually have to drive one out, and that'll happen. There's no need, unless it's bottom of ninth, down by one, two outs, and okay, we need a Jimmy. We just need a Jack. Go ahead. Majority of the time, stay with who you are, and it's going to work.
Do you see that one of the mistakes of younger guys is they try to just do too much in general?
Yeah, but it's not their fault. It's not their fault. Everyone right now tells you get in the back hip. What are that? Here's your force plate. Here's your strongest position. Well, that's great. But he's not even efficient in that position, but he's getting in that position all the time because one out of 15 balls in BP went so far. The rest of them were rollovers, flares, and all. They forget about that because they're only being told about that one ball. See, that's it right there. That's it. You're like, okay. So that's the problem. Whether it's a minor league kid, young minor league kid, or a young amateur kid, doesn't matter. They're getting told that. And you know what? They're 9 times out of 10, we're losing the battle, guys who are just trying to help them out and hit.
How often, I think this is something I think a lot of young players will want to know is how often when you're throwing batting practice, these guys are doing flips. How often are they miss hitting balls? Because I think there's times when even in batting practice, I think there's for younger players, they think they have to be perfect. And if they're not perfect, they freak out.
Yeah, that's a great question. I love that. And that I talk all the time. Our pre-practice is not to be perfect. We practice to be good in the game. So you may need to over-exaggerate something and be the worst ground ball if you're left-handed hitter, ground ball to third and short every single swing because you're pulling off for that game to get a line drive up the middle. So it's our guys, we always talk about, you know, let's try to get into the red zone. Because in football, we call it the red zone. They flip to that channel when a team can score. Well, they're in the red zone. They're not on the 1 yard line. They might be on the 19 yard line, the 20. They're going to show up. You don't need to be perfect. Being perfect is too hard in baseball. It's about you're going to have bad swings. What did you learn from that swing? Don't all of a sudden change something. Maybe that was just a pitch. Maybe you were late. Maybe. So don't just freak out and think you need to hit a ball perfect. Because sometimes in BP or in soft toss, hitting the ball perfect is just all about you manipulating and spinning correctly at the right time when because the ball's underhand or the ball's soft. So the movement is more important. The idea in your mind of what you're trying to do is more important than just that result in practice.
How often are you guys working on hitting ground balls to the opposite field?
I don't want to say ground balls, but they hit for the most part. They try to hit line drives at opposite field all the time.
All the time.
So I say anything that hits the dirt, in my opinion now, is not a ground ball. So if you skip and pass the infield grass and let it hit the dirt, because you know I have big league infielders that I hit with. So when I ask them if the ball hits the dirt first, how hard? He said, you got a step and a half. That's it. So you have so many chances to get a hit if that's your swing path. It doesn't have to be, you know, just hit the grass in the outfield. One hopper through the field, infield, you're hitting the dirt, you got a pretty good chance to get a hit.
If you could pick one BP round, one hitting drill, one like what would be the one thing that you hang your hat on? Like as the thing that's like, man, like I've seen this help more players than not.
Dirty 30. Yeah. I go back to my high school days and I'm on the mound and I let it fly. I'm throwing fastballs as hard as I can. I'm sliders, curves, changes, and it's a game. They have live at bats off me. And we do it for just regular BP too. So they'll have 5, 6 swings, 7 swings, and I'll do mixed pitching. But when we do actual counts and stuff, it's let's go. And you see them get in the game mode. They're not trying to hit balls all over the place. They're swinging at the right pitches. You know, they don't want to get out to me. So that by far is the best drill we do. They always
and you
ask
threw
for
a phenomenal BP, by the way. I've seen a lot of your videos. It's phenomenal.
Maybe I clip them up. So you, no. But I mean, I try to cut them. I try to, two seam. I try to slide, cut everything you can to those guys when we do those drills. So any hitter, I don't even care if he's a bad hitter. You throw a fastball down the plate in BP, man, come on, they're going to hit, right?
Yeah.
Just like
yeah.
when you do soft toss, they're going to hit.
Yeah.
So the challenge is they don't know if it's coming inside. They don't know if it's coming outside. They don't know if it's a ball. They don't know if it's a strike. And they have to be ready at any time. So for those are majority of our rounds versus we obviously have feel good and throw it right there. You know, there's times for that as well.
Yeah, how long would a typical session be? Like, I think that'd be interesting to know is how many swings are these guys taking on a daily basis?
That's a great question. So we used to actually last year, we would put a whole plan together on a piece of paper the night before, and it would have actually how many swings, regardless of that round, even if you felt good, well, okay, we can do the round again, but we would do the swings. Well, that didn't last long. No, Cody Bellinger's not, I don't feel right. We're going to swing again. All right, come on, let's go. You know, so,
yeah.
But to that point, believe it or not, when we go a 3 hour session, we still may only hit one bag of baseballs, one and a half. We talk a lot. We stop. What do you got here? You know, for the most part, if we did three, that means someone joined us in that second hour and we did some more stuff. But I mean, really, it can go from they feel so good to 30, 45 minutes to, you know, usually about 2 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's I like that though. A lot of it's conversation. I mean, hitting is a conversation.
Yeah, and this is a trial and error, because before I thought I knew it all like anybody else does, right? Oh yeah, I got my base view, I got this, I know the body now, I know that this is a great, and then you realize that no, whatever he's telling me is the most important thing, not just what I know. I got to know what he's telling me so I can have a conversation with him. And we can come up with the best idea.
Are you finding yourself wanting, are you asking them questions, or are they most of the time instigating it and telling you what they're feeling?
Well, it first starts out. So if I have a new guy, it's more of they're waiting for me to, because they're so used to the coaches now telling them, even though they come on these podcasts, they come on and show, oh yeah, I like to talk to the hitter and that bullshit crap. They're sitting there. They ain't listening to the hitter at all. They're already ready for their answers. I'm just as guilty as the next person. Don't get me wrong. I'm not gonna sit here, oh yeah, I look bull crap. I was terrible too. So they're waiting. The new guys are more or less waiting for you to tell them things. And it's like once they really realize that, no, I need to hear what you really feel. They start talking and then they start being the one to, hey, I felt this. What do you got? Hey, I love that. So tell me about where you felt it, why you felt it. Okay. So that drill we do right there, that's the whole progression of now you understanding of how to feel it. So we just walk through progressions and how they understand how it's working is really important.
What about if you're working with a player who's very quiet, doesn't like to say very much at all?
I'm too loud, so they start talking.
Yeah.
No, I mean, so there are quieter players, but I don't know any in this level when it comes to hitting. I have had in the minors, I've had some really quiet guys and shy, and they won't give you anything. But to be honest, they're just not ready. They're not ready to come out of their shell, and that's okay. You can't force it, because once you start forcing it, they get uncomfortable. So sometimes you just have to let them grow into it. So there's nothing you can do. You just keep saying the right things, and that's the best you can do. Because if you force a kid who's quiet, who doesn't want to talk, the worst thing you can do is put them in a situation where they're uncomfortable. So then you end up leading him to all his drills, but he doesn't really know why. He doesn't understand why. He doesn't know what he's really supposed to be feeling. So you just sit there and tell him the right things, tell him the right things until he's ready.
I think you, I maybe I cut you off there for a second, but you said that at the level of the players that you're working with, the major league level, those hitters, it's very rare for them not to be okay with talking.
Yeah, no. So people don't, it takes a special guy to be able to hit the major leagues. And that's why you see people get to the major leagues and they can't hit the third deck, they call it, right? So that person has to have that ability. Cody had it. So if he's insecure, not sure, whatever, well, what does he do? He comes out, let's go. He comes out fighting. Might not be the greatest thing because you need to calm down and say, but you give yourself a chance that way. He's not going to just sit back and give up. So that hitter, once you start hitting, man, it's like, oh my God, their eyes light up and they want to just talk, 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 and they want to say what they're feeling. So most of the time we have to calm it down versus get them going.
Okay, I gotcha. I mean, I could go all day with questions. I know you've
I
been
love it, man.
in
Keep
this
going.
game so long. What's a routine that you've seen? Maybe it's unique or whatnot from a player, maybe back when you were playing or coaching. What's a routine that you resonate with, that you like, that you've seen a lot of guys do and find it beneficial? Because I think a lot of players, they don't even know how to build a routine, or much less what a good routine looks like.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan, and it's not everybody. Some people, Ichiro, for example, goes, when he takes BP, lets it fly, right? First swing.
Oh,
I
he
saw him in
does?
Japan do something. Yeah, I saw him in Japan do something a little different when we played against him in Japan. But I'm a big fan of taking the feet out, whether you have a board or if you're good enough, you don't need a board anymore. And certain players are great at split grip. Other players, shoulder separation issues, and the other guys, they struggle a little bit with split grip. So we'll go to a short bat. Then we'll go to a full bat, but with abbreviated stop through the middle of the field. When I see that in the bat path, that ball just, the bat follows the ball and they're through the zone. We're like, man, you got it. They're not trying to other 57, 61 miles an hour exit velo. You know, that's what we're talking about. I'll have guys do that drill and they're like 82. And I'm like, dude, really? Are you kidding me? Right? And they'll come in, you know, and it's usually a younger minor leaguer or whatever come in. I'm like, dude, you see those three guys right there? They got silver slugger. I mean, people, you see how soft they're hitting the ball, and every ball's in center field, you know? And wow. So that's what I like. Really controlled. Trying to understand, get your movement right, not trying to get in there and show off for the next guy. Because young hitters, that's what they do. They're really just in rookie ball and they're just showing, they're competing against the other guy who just hit in their same group, you know. So guys who are doing what they need to do, those are my drills. When they do that, then they get in there, whether a guy does a walkthrough, step behind, knee, whatever he needs to do. But I don't like it when guys walk in there and take full batting practice on underhand flips. And I'm like, what did you just accomplish? You know?
You said you saw Ichiro, his BP was just right out of the gate. He's trying to hit bombs.
Oh, yeah, it's unbelievable in the States. That's what he started doing. Yeah. But in Japan, he had rounds where he would go the first round, he'd go oppo left field, then oppo left center, then oppo center, and then just hit bombs, absolute bombs to right field. I mean, and it was a joke. They had win any home run derby contest. It was unbelievable. Yeah.
How many guys have you seen do that, where they just try to get there and right out of the gate, they're just trying to drop bombs? I heard Matt Holliday did it. I know it's got to be very rare.
It's very, very rare out of the get-go like that. Yeah. But he did it like effortless. It wasn't like he was trying hard. He was just gifted, man. It's another level.
What's some of the insight that you guys are talking about? Because I'm sure part of this is it's not just the movement piece of it, right? But it's also the game planning piece of it, right? Like how the pitcher's attacking them, and different off-speed pitches. Like, what are some of the conversations that you're having with guys, maybe even at times during the season, of like game planning and kind of the game within the game?
Yeah, no, that's because there is a good question. Because I'm on the phone 3, 4 times with a lot of these guys during the season. They're calling me up, whether they're on their way to the ballpark or if things aren't really going good, I might get the call after the game, you know, or they're stressed out before the game. And then we talk and they're like, all right, I'll relax and they'll have a good game. They'll laugh and joke or something like that. But no, it's, you know, who are you facing? You know, what have they been getting you out with? What can you stay off of? Or right now, you can't stay off of that, then stop trying to stay off it. You know what I mean? And it's not always a just swing at this pitch. That's impossible, you know? So, hey, what can you do to get back in it? I mean, like you said, Jake Lill's been banging me up right now. He's in camp with only 5, 6, 7 at bats, you know, but he is pulling off. The one hit he had is going through the ball the other day. So, with him, it's don't worry about how hard you hit the ball right now. Try to force yourself to get jammed. Hit everything the other way. Get jammed. I always say hit the ball. I need the label to be inside the ball before you release the barrel. So go ahead and hit the ball off the label. Try to hit off the label. You'll probably hit off the barrel and you'll stay through a ball. It's simple as that. Game planning, looking on whether it's true meat or whatever, and seeing where they're tending to throw you. But they know. They know exactly what they're getting and what they're gonna get. There's no secret. Everyone knows this team throws me this. This team in the big leagues, they face each other. They face them all the time. It's not like, you know, all of a sudden you're facing a guy for the first time. They've been facing them. They know what they're getting, and it's about just getting their mind right to get back into certain drills that click in for them for that where they're going through at that moment.
Do you talk and kind of work with a lot of these guys, like their hitting coach for their organization, or
That's
not
very
really?
interesting. I've never had one hitting coach talk to me.
Really?
So it's very interesting, especially LA, say wherever. I'm not going to say wherever. Most of these guys are talking to their own guys. It's crazy. Now, it doesn't mean the guys aren't helping them that are there or saying whatever, you know. But no, there's some that do reach out. For me, I haven't had anyone reach out. I always ask what are the hitting coaches talking about? So I'm always on the same page as them and you have them be able to go into the hitting coach and explain exactly where they're at and what they're feeling so they can help them instead of saying, hey, this guy doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. Of course he knows what he's talking about. I mean, those guys are smart. They're not dumb. But you got to be able to, as a hitter, explain yourself as well. And that's huge. Because everyone's looking for an answer. The coaches are always looking for an answer instead of listening to the player too much.
That quick fix. Everyone wants a quick fix.
Everyone thinks it's that easy, man. I used to ask the analytical guys this question. I said, would you rather know how the pitch is going to move and the shape of the pitch, or would you rather know the location of that pitch, but he can throw any pitch? Every single analytical guy tells me I would rather know how it moves, because if I know how it moves, I'm going to hit it. Every single hitter says, dude, you give me the location, I'm good to go. I don't care what pitch it is. If I know that's going to go right there, I'm good. That's all I need to know. That's the difference right now.
Would you ever want to get back and coach at the major league level?
Man, I don't think you never say never to anything, because with the right staff, right team, right everything, you would want to. But the way it's getting run right now, it really is a joke. I can get a page full of my every single hitter, everything they're doing right or wrong, and then this is what you need to do. Whether that might be the result, but here are the two things that are happening before that he's doing wrong, and that's why that result goes. But you're listening to someone who's never gotten to the box and tell you how to coach them. And no matter what they say when they're getting interviewed or they're doing this, they're all the same. They all have the answer, because their job relies on their algorithm. Their job does not rely on getting the player right. As long as he's on the paper, he's hitting the ball this hard, exit velocity is this, he's doing this, he's hitting in the air, whatever. That's what, wins. We would get weekly reports on hitters. We'd have Elijah Green at a 45% strikeout rate. He's in the top of our organization in hitting last year, Same thing with Cruz. I mean, he was in Double A. I mean, he I don't know if he'd fall out of water if he fell out of a boat in the lake. He would hit the one rock in the lake. It was just bad at the time. Obviously, he's a good hitter and going to do well, but he's in the top of the thing. And then we had guys when Jacob Young went all the way from A ball to the big leagues. He's like league average or below. I'm like, what is going on? And no one knows their algorithm point. They keep that to themselves. So the result of win or loss sometimes get lost right now. Runs are important. If you score more runs and stop the other team from scoring runs, you can win a game. But no, that's unfortunate. So to the answer to that question after that long, long ramble I just did is it's just too taxing right now to be in professional ball. And they'll say, ah, he's just old, he's this, he's that. And it's true, maybe I am, But at the end of the day, it wears you out. You're listening to people not want to listen to you.
It's like it's the corporate world, right?
Yes.
It's a corporate world, man. Yeah, I mean, I think, at the end of the day too, and I think after people have listened to this episode, I'm sure they will agree, but we had Michael Kadire on a month or two ago, and I loved what he said about how the swing is a science, but hitting is an art.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, so I've
Love
been
that.
using that a lot
I love
lately.
that.
But Micah, I appreciate you coming on, man. Good luck this year with the Oakland Ballers. Hope you guys kill it, win the whole thing. But it was good seeing you again, man.
Dude, it was awesome, man. I'm glad we did. I know we held off a little bit to wait till Cody, because we didn't want to ruin anything before he
Yeah, we didn't
signed.
want
But
him to,
yeah.
not get as much money or anything,
I
will we?
exactly. No doubt. No doubt. But no, it was awesome being on, man. Thanks.